Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Anatomy of Movie, as today we dissect The Shallows, the new Blake Lively movie, also featuring a shark. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Shallows here on Anatomy of a Movie as we dissect it. Of course, we assume that you've seen the movie, so it's going to be spoiler-filled, although what I appreciate most about this movie is the simplicity of the plot. As you can imagine, it's woman versus shark, as the trailer implies. We have Dimitri Panos.
Hello, movie fans. How are ya?
Darn right. And we have Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Let's, as always, start with overall thoughts. And by the way, you can download our rundown in the description box. Just click the link, download it. That way you can follow along. We try to, you know, get through everything, but there's certain things that are on the rundown that we don't necessarily hit that you can dig a little bit further, if you will. This is the conversation supplements the rundown. The rundown supplements the conversation. Dimitri, you're a shark lover.
I am. Since I was a little boy, I'm watching Shark Week. Or, well, not right now, but I have many Shark Weeks on my DVR episodes, especially that Greg Scomel guy from Woods Hole.
Yes. Yeah. So you were among one of the people that was very excited to see this movie.
I was. I couldn't wait. In fact, I got to be honest. I wanted to end up liking this movie a lot more than I ended up liking it. It had all the makings of being an above-average, let's call it shark thriller or a thriller. I thought we had a great concept, a really solid marketing campaign, which, you know, Sony actually did a good job, and it got me interested in doing this. They great trailers. Very good marketing campaign. Blake Lively in surf attire and a giant great white shark. I found the movie to be very suspenseful at times. And then, unfortunately, there are other times that just almost made me angry. The director, Jamie Colette Serra. This is a guy that did Nonstop, a movie that we enjoyed and talked about here. He's a very visual director for sure, and some of his underwater and surf sequences and building suspense, like, were great. Other times I just felt like they were filming in a big lot pool, like a water pool. There were times where he almost seemed to forget how to, like, set up a scene, specifically lighting shark on fire and the self-impalement death of the shark. Dare I say Jaws the Revenge, ending of that movie.
He said he didn't watch Jaws. So.
I know, but it was just odd that I wish there was more setup. Like the scene, the fire shark scene, it was all like she's shoots the flare into the water, and we just, I'm assuming that there's blubber there, but I didn't see anything previous to say that this blubber is really going to catch fire. And then at the end, I was trying to figure out, what the hell is she doing? Why is she slingshotting herself to the bottom of the ocean to this thing? Like, because we didn't see exactly what that was. And then when it happened, yeah, but you should let the audience try to know what's going on to build more suspense.
I like those moments when I what I can appreciate about a movie like this and just kind of movies in general, I don't mind it when the character is ahead of me and I'm like, wait, what does she know that I don't?
Yeah, but it also builds suspense in the sense that, oh, okay, I know what she wants to do. Is she going to get there in time? Because there was that turned out to be a great race between man and fish, and she was slingshotting down, but I'm like going, why? Why is she doing this? I know there's got to be a reason, but like, why? And then if you know the reason, you're like, oh shit, that's what she's going to try to do? Oh my God, okay,
but
great,
that was also
but it's
a big,
coming up.
Holy shit moment. Yeah, that was a big moment.
But it still would have been a big moment, I think. But, you know, enough. But then Then there were certain scenes that were just plain silly, like fire shark and jellyfish shark. I mean, it was, you know, they were just, there's, come on. Like, shark, a great white shark, he's going to go through jellyfish, whatever. It, like, I didn't buy that. And even though the movie was a slim 87 minutes, it was a slim 87 minutes, to me it felt like an hour and a half. So it felt that middle lagged to mm-hmm. me, and I felt that they could have had, all right, let me throw this out there to the both of you. Mm. Say in the middle of this movie, instead of her trying to go for the GoPro, which again was another setup that I'm like, why the hell is this camera so important to you? Like, why do you need to get this camera? If she had woken up in the morning and there was like a Mexican fisherman who is coming in from his morning haul who sees her, and then there's a hope of a rescue. Because there wasn't any time where I felt that she could actually get off this rock, right, with any semblance of safety. And there was the hope of rescue. And as the fisherman comes up with his haul and he's like going to try to get her onto the boat, or she gets onto the boat, this great behemoth attacks. And right there. And then again, all hope is lost. Like, it didn't have that moment in it for me, which could have made it a little suspenseful and could have moved that middle a lot quicker for me. That's
a fair enough question to
ultimately
ask.
It suspenseful at times, you know. Blake Lively, I think, you know, this is a movie that falls on her shoulders. Like, she's got to carry it.
We'll talk about it. We'll definitely talk about that performance. Marissa, what about for you?
I thought it was actually, I liked it more than I thought I was going to. I've seen a lot of shark movies in the last few years, thanks to Phil.
Darn right.
We'd be watching a surprising amount of shark movies. But I thought this had a great balance of...
You gotta understand your enemy, by the way.
Thriller.
That's why you gotta watch shark movies.
Yeah, I thought this movie had a great balance of thriller. Yes, Blake, for being pretty much a one-woman show, I thought she brought it. And it takes a lot to only be by yourself for an hour and a half and to still make it interesting. I thought she did that pretty well, because throughout the whole film, I was like, oh my God, I'm really worried for this character, for Nancy. It's like, is she going to get off this rock that she's mm-hmm. been stranded on? Mm-hmm. I really felt that for her. The shark, I liked the slow buildup to how scary we should, or how much we should be afraid of the shark. Because they didn't really give us a clear, you know, visual shot of the shark. So it really allowed the audience to make it as scary as they wanted it to be. But I think this movie had a good balance of thriller, scariness. There was some levity in it with the seagull.
Steven Seagal?
Yeah, Steven Seagal. but, you know, for a shark movie, out of the ones that I have seen, this actually wasn't too bad.
I loved, there was cheesiness, and I loved it from the get-go, and, you know, it's got some lines that you're just laughing at because you know what's about to happen. The fact that, like, what's this place called? It's called Paradise. That's all you need to know. Right. And everyone in the audience is like, not for long! You know, and so you go along with the ride, and even the ending is cheesy. Hey, hold on. Your mother, she'd be very proud. It's like, okay, thanks.
I think they filmed that scene just because they were at 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they needed 7 more minutes to make it like a full-fledged theatrical.
Well, it also gave her the motive of like, okay, she's not afraid to go back into the water. She's overcome her fear.
Yeah.
There's that side of it where she's not going to be the scared little girl for the rest of her life. You know, she's a fighter.
And for that, it kind of reminded me of Soul Surfer, you know, actually based on a real story. Yeah. Like this girl who was attacked by a shark and her arm was bitten off. Like, she still went back into the water and still became an awesome surfer. She was an awesome surfer, but, like, still taught everyone else how to surf and love the water and love the sport of surfing and whatnot. So it's like, I liked the fact that, yes, Nancy went through a horrible predicament, but it didn't dictate her life choices mm-hmm. afterwards.
Well, she definitely has an arc, and obviously, you know, I guess the shark is a metaphor for the fears that this character had in life. You know, and I get that, and that's, you know, interesting. I just wish there was some hokiness and cheese that was put into the middle that I want to see the shark again. Let's get back to the suspense that you were building. I thought that was really good.
Well, the interesting part was, you know, the director actually talks about, I'm gonna just call him JCS. You can call him JCS.
Okay. Or Colette, Sarah.
So JCS, you know, he said, like, to me, this isn't just a shark movie, it's a survival movie. And so, okay, if you fundamentally look at it like that, then yeah, you understand why the middle parts doesn't have as much of the shark versus, like, you know, we look at it and through the marketing, we, you know, that's why he disagrees with the marketing to a lesser extent, is because they market it as a shark movie. And hence, well, what we're going in with.
Yeah, and I know we'll talk marketing a bit more, but to me, what grabbed me about the marketing was the concept that they sold. Okay, because I still got from it that it is a survival movie, but it was called The Shallows. They had this amazing tagline, "What was once in the deep is now in the shallows." And they set a ticking, like a countdown clock, basically. She gets hit by the shark. She's able to swim to the shoal. And we know that high tide is going to come in, and eventually her safe haven is going to go away. What is she going to do in that time period to get to some semblance of safety? That is what I went in predicated from the marketing, thinking this is a great concept, yet the high tide came in and she still had a safe haven, so to speak. Like, it never went away. So it made me wonder, well, why the hell would you leave this? To, like, you know, to try to go here, to me, the ticking time bomb of a short movie like this could have worked, and she maybe would have been a little more even resourceful. So the marketing, at least, that's the way.
Let me answer the question that was on my mind, and we'll go into development and writing. But what was on my mind was, why couldn't she do what I forget the character's name in Deep Blue Sea at the beginning when he's dealing with the tiger shark?
Thomas Jane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He rides the fin.
He does a little somersault. But yeah.
You know, not that, like, if I would not be willing to try that, but if I was in Nancy Adams' situation, I'd give that a go.
Maybe.
What have you got to lose other than a
limb? But in fairness, he wasn't as beaten up as Nancy was at that point. So.
True.
So, true. I mean, she's been through a lot. Physically, she might not have been capable to hang on.
Yeah, early on, I think she could have still.
Yeah.
But neither here nor there. So let's talk about this. I mean, you know, very simple movie, very simple premise is what I loved about it. Originally called In the Deep. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see.
The director, Louis Leterrier, who's, you know, done a lot of great movies and whatnot, he was actually originally supposed to be the director for this film, but he dropped out due to creative differences. So I was like, there's really not a lot of creative differences that you could have with a simple movie as this one. But
I'm curious to what those creative differences might be.
Yeah.
You know, because the movie, yeah, I mean, I would be very curious to know what he would wanted to have done and have made the story.
Well, it would have been interesting because the script was blacklisted in 2014. And so, but, you know, we've talked about this before. For those of you who are avid listeners, it's basically a script that it's great script, but it's never going to get made type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it'd be interesting to read that script, you know, the 2014 version, to see, you know, because that might shed some light as to why.
It would be fascinating, and why wouldn't it be made? Why? Because you can't sequelize it? Because you can't, like, to me, again, the concept of this story makes for great summer fare.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and it delivers, you know, with that potential to deliver on all fronts, where you can get a great cross-section of audience, because you have things that people like. You know, you have people in peril. You have survivalists. It's woman versus nature. It's suspenseful. Some comedic elements, you know. So
male gaze.
Yeah, and I would love to see that script, like you said, to say, why couldn't this be made? I mean, they made this movie, and, you know, they gave a good crack at it. You know, that bothers me when they say this is a movie that couldn't be made. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
They made it. They made it for a modest budget.
I mean, yeah. $17 million, you know, it's not what I would necessarily consider an indie, but still.
On the heels. Yeah. It's close.
Yeah.
Close to it.
I'm one of those, like, you make a movie for $500,000 or less. That's indie to me. But, yeah, no, you know, still very, very, very low, you know? And they, I think they spent, JCS's thing, you know, every movie that has ever been shot on water has gone over budget and over schedule. We went a bit over budget, but we couldn't go over schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so they accomplished that.
You know, one thing too, when you're working on a smaller budget, and we talk about script, one scene, if we're talking about script and changes, the one scene that I know of for a fact that they actually changed on site, they were shooting, was the scene in which the fat man, the drunk fat man, is taken by the Great White. And apparently, well, we know what happens in the movie. It's a shot that pulls in tighter and tighter on Blake Lively's face. Okay, probably to me, her best part of the performance in this movie. I mean, she's really good, but this was the scene.
She had to sell that.
She sold uncut. It. Yeah. And she sold it. And the only, and you got to figure, because they actually did film Fatso getting taken. They filmed the attack. So you could tell that they were, as he's moving in, they probably would have cut to, the next cut would have been a little bit closer, cut back to the attack. But Colette Serra had said, she sold it so well, we didn't need to. It would have been redundant. We didn't need to do it because originally it was in the script that we would see this attack. I find that to be, I love that sort of thing.
I liked it because it showed, the way that they showed it was like it was all based on sound effect and whatnot. And the audience, again, used their imaginations to see how scary it was. And we only saw the result of what happened and not the actual thing.
And you know, he's like, for a surfboard, you got the money, dude. You got the cell phone. What are you going to get for the surfboard? Just leave
That's what you're going to get. You're going to get et. here's my thing, though. So we see the money shot after. Half of his body's climbing up on the beach. It's like, you know.
The slow reveal, too.
Right. Nobody sees this half body laying.
Later. Like, he's still dead.
He might have stunk a little, too. But I was like, oh, okay, I guess pay no attention to the fat half man.
I think he might have gotten washed away.
His pants. But it looked like he made it sort of to shore. But again, Blake Lively sold it. And I like the fact that the director, like, said, "Hey, you know what? I can compose the shot on this," and because she was so good, I don't need to edit, and maybe even add to the budget by showing a shark attack.
I think that also just shows her acting capability. It's like she's not just pretty. I mean, she is pretty, but that she actually has acting chops to carry a full entire movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and speak other things that were also the seagull was in fact in the script.
Yes.
So they love that side of it, and he says it's a device for her to be able to kind of communicate and whatnot. Not to the level that Snow White was with her talking birds. Right. He jokes, but nonetheless, it was a device.
And it gave
the seagull was levity. Absolutely,
it was levity. But it also gave her, instead of just over voice, like, instead of her just talking to no one, okay, you know, and then you're like, well, who are you talking to? You know, you get that the person's going to be working it out, but the seagull is sort of kind of Castaway.
Wilson.
I mean, you know, Wilson's he's a soccer ball.
Wilson was washed away.
Yeah, but you have that device so that the actor doesn't appear to be, like, he's not talking
Gone
to anybody.
Crazy.
And you understand. And she's worked, like, why would a person go, oh, okay, I have to do this, this, and this. If she's talking to a seagull, you get, that's her Wilson, in a sense.
Well, I also saw that the bird was kind of like the reflection of her inner spirit, more so. Because as an audience member, I was also rooting for the bird, who was also injured by the same shark. And I was like, if the bird can survive, maybe she can survive. So, like, I was rooting for both of these characters to make it to the end of the film.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good point, too. And it could have been, like, you know, you can go further and say that it was the spirit of her mother. You know, it flies off, it's white. You know, I find that the casting of the seagull, because it was a real seagull, they didn't CGI it. I find that was really funny because they actually they went to a rehab facility to find seagulls. They found three Actually,
they found six.
Really?
Yeah, they had a flock of six that they could have chosen.
Oh, because, Colizero said, we found three seagulls that were injured. They were used to being around humans for many years. Two were, he said, sort of dumb. And one was a genius. So one was the hero seagull that they used. But I found that very interesting. And to their one of their production folks, they were like, can you train a seagull? Yeah. And they're like, yeah, well, how do we do this? It's like a lot of treats.
Yeah, I mean, most animals are motivated by food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what, especially seagulls, mm-hmm. especially in that way.
Mine.
But going back to kind of a quicker point, right? You know, one of the strengths, it's not, it's somewhat obvious, I guess, but I like, you talked about the metaphors and things like that, and speaking of the seagull being a reflection of her mother, and even just the way we can interpret various things, right? Because when she gets to the beach, what's his name, Carlos, right? He's, you know, oh, and that's the pregnant woman, she says. He's like, no, that's just the, you know, he doesn't say, but he's like, he just thinks they're a bunch of hills and rocks. Right. Like, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
But to her, it means something. Yeah. And so just the way we interpret various things and sure. whatnot, you know, I thought was very prevalent for me, and I enjoyed kind of looking into that after I had seen the entire movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was a good thing. It was an interesting thing to go back on. And when I was done watching the movie, that was actually part of the topic of conversation.
Yeah, because even the you know even the dolphins, like initially, you know, when you see dolphins, it's like you really you know, I mean, people go whale watching, they go dolphin watching, whatever, and they go swimming with the dolphins, and it's sure. a great thing. Yeah. In this case, it's an omen, but you just yeah. don't realize it as yeah. you're in the moment because we you know,
yeah.
something's coming.
Yeah. Although they do say that if you are around dolphins, that it's when the dolphins disappear is when you should get nervous. But
well, that's what they were doing. They were going away.
They were running away. Mm-hmm. Run away.
So, yeah, absolutely.
But that was my other thing, too. It's like you saw this big carcass out in the ocean. I'm like, you're going the wrong way. Don't go towards the blood in the whale carcass. What are you doing?
Curiosity.
Like, yeah, no. Not in the ocean. That means she's never seen a shark movie. Yeah. Or
but
shark
in
week.
Fairness, that's why she got attacked, because she went up onto the shark's feeding ground. So, like, in a way, not to sound mean, but, like, she did deserve it. She had it coming.
She, in a sense, yeah.
Yeah,
she messed with the livelihood of this shark.
Oh, but I'm just...
So let's... We'll get into Nancy in a minute, but one of the things that, you know, again, there's... this great, and there's going to be an ongoing debate of, like, you know, we'll talk about the shark, but in regards to Nancy, what's accurate and what's not, and they're like, surfers never should go with, like, earrings and shiny jewelry, and right. mm-hmm. but obviously she needed to, because then that's what gets her stitched up.
And surfers should never go alone.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I mean, just in common practice, if you're going to do something physically kind of actually dangerous, you should never do it alone.
To be fair, it wouldn't have helped, because... there were two guys, and they were it's paired true. Up, and they were easily more they yeah, were more easily
like,
killed.
It's not like she called those guys up beforehand, be no. like, hey, I'm going surfing, come join me. No, she went by herself. She left her friend behind, who was drunk. Like, she actively went by herself.
No, moral true, of the story is true. It's probably better to go surfing alone. I fear for her and her sister now that they're surfing together. Right? That is the moral of the story. Yeah. So... but all right,
you can't argue with that in this movie's logic.
That's right. So, all right. So, you know, much like the movie, let's spend some time talking about the good old Blake Lively. Which, you know, I mean, people can say what they want, but I think she's a good actress.
I yeah. think so too.
You know, got her. You know, started with Gossip Girl, Age of Adeline. Savages was a little bit crazy, but I
she was good in Savages.
She was
yeah.
good.
Yeah. The town.
Yeah, she really was good fantastic in the town.
Yeah.
No, I think she's a good actress as well. And again, you need a person who can carry this movie, who's going to be believable. And you need to, you know, while everything fit perfectly, like she was a medical person, so she knew how to dress the wounds. Okay, I'll forgive that. But she looked like the person who had earn that, at least. You know, she looked and she played the part. So we saw despair, we saw fear, but yet we saw determination. We saw smarts. The way she figured out, let's just say figured out a problem. So that in the wrong actress, if you're not gonna buy it, then the whole movie, the entire movie would have fallen apart. No. You know? Mm-hmm. So she was very good in this.
And she liked that challenge of it. And, you know, this and that, and it's only few actors, you know, you guys were mentioning Tom Hanks, you know, only so few actors have kind of gone on this type of journey, and so it's a very big undertaking.
What did you think, Marissa? Like,
I really enjoyed Blake's performance, and I liked the character of Nancy in and of herself for many reasons, because Blake actually apparently did most of her stunts up until the last 2 weeks. Production, but they actually hired a junior number one surfer for all the surfing scenes.
Which, like, again, the digital putting her face on, that didn't work for me. But,
I couldn't tell.
Whatever, because it's not about the surfing, it's about the shark. That didn't bother me, whatever. I think her acting capability was really good to carry the whole film for being a simple movie, but I really enjoyed the physicality that like she actually had to go through, because I felt like she was getting beat up and she had to suture herself with her own earring, and that was painful to watch, but yet I watched it. I liked the development of the character for a simple character, because we learned that she had that medical background, and that automatically with me triggered. I was like, okay, she knows medical practices, she knows how to survive in that way if she got her leg bitten off. And then even when during the night and whatnot, she was trying to like keep herself warm, she kept explaining, okay, this is a compression sleeve, so like she does know how to survive,
right?
Medically,
she just needs better friends.
Yeah
and better clothing to help. So like throughout the whole film I was rooting for her.
Yeah Which is, could you imagine throughout the whole film not wanting to root for the person if they were just that dumb? Right?
And she was very likable.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, she immediately made friends with Carlos and those guys. And it's like, if we had to watch a whole hour and a half movie of someone that you didn't like, I would have walked out.
Yeah. It wouldn't. Number one, it would have hurt the suspense because you don't care as much. You know, what I found interesting, too, with Blake Lively in this is, as we all know, it takes many people to make a movie, right? And many people can be on set at any given time. A lot of people. But there were a lot of times where Blake Lively had to put herself, like, she was alone. Like, they didn't have anybody, so they would have her on the rock, and then the shots were coming from a helicopter
shot.
Far away. So she was literally left alone, and she goes, I got to our set, our rock and buoy, out in the middle of the ocean, and everybody left me there and went back to the shore. Because you can't have people like around.
Yeah, because they'll be in the shot.
And I'm sitting there 300 or 400 yards from shore, waiting alone in an aggressive rising tide for the helicopter with a camera to crest over the mountain. After a few minutes, it's like, oh, okay, come on, hurry up. Let's come back. It's, but she found it to be beautiful, terrifying, and a very moving experience. But
yeah, and she hasn't, not to my knowledge, gone out and said anything about this. But also, you have to kind of, you almost get stuck in the horror. I can imagine in this, because it's one thing to wait, but like you're also like, wait, is there gonna be a
you
shark?
Know the movie you're making, right?
Okay, like, hey, guys, come on, this thing's gonna eat me. Yeah. Like I can't see.
I'm not
it, but
acting anymore.
Can't come and get me now, damn it.
Absolutely. So, she, and the fact that she put a lot into this, so one of the things, they kept it in the movie, but just going back to her stunts being real, when she hit the buoy and, you know, she bleeds or whatever, that was a real thing. Like, just keep rolling.
Mm-hmm.
We real. Got this.
Suffer for your art.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yep.
You know?
I'm
sure her getting bit by the seagull, that wasn't,
stupid bird, swine bird.
Yeah, that was nothing compared to what the shark did to her. Ooh, yeah. Tickles.
in terms of the setup, I like the techniques too of that they set up with the photos initially, right? We kind of have like a superimposition of what she's seeing. And then obviously later that translates to the high tide of like 6 hours to high tide or this and that. So, mm-hmm. you know, that little bit carried throughout. And I didn't think it took away, you know, even though it was...
Are you talking about like the visuals that they had?
Yeah, the Skype and then this and that.
That at the beginning, that sort of annoyed me. It was getting like, it was just, I get what you're trying to do. It was a little bit overly stylistic for this simplistic kind of a movie. I don't know. And even when she was on the rock, again, it just was going into like, really? Like, how does the, number one, I was thinking, and I thought about this later, like this shark could eat a buoy and yet this GoPro camera survives an attack. And I thought the GoPro could have been used to a heck of a lot more
actually,
advantage.
I think it was because, I mean, off of both of those points, they're like at the beginning, we did see the very first shot was the helmet and the GoPro. And that was the foreshadowing of what happened. We saw a quick blip of what, okay, there's a shark here in this water. And then that obviously carried over to the surfers, carried over to Nancy. I was like, okay, this GoPro is a key factor, so it will come back. And then for the stylistic Skyping and FaceTiming and whatnot, they did make that statement of like, hey, get off your cell phone, you're in here in paradise or whatever. And I like the fact that they kind of used it a lot to show that she was dependent on technology. And then literally when that went away, she was now dependent on herself and her skills set and her wits and knowledge. So I liked how you're so dependent on technology and now you're just dependent on yourself.
Which is a fantastic, I agree, it's a fantastic point. It was just stylistically, like, I didn't need to see the texts coming up on the screen back and forth or her Skyping coming up. Like, I would have gotten the same picture.
I get it. It's something that he borrowed from Nonstop and it worked well in that movie. Yeah.
It works well in Sherlock or in anything. And I think also, like, the reason why people change styles or make it more stylistic, because if you actually show the screen of an iPhone, that immediately gets outdated within a year, you know? So, like, I didn't mind the fact that, like, I got the idea that they're FaceTiming.
Yeah. But again, going back to the GoPro, again, just like this is the little geek kid who likes shark movies, they could have used that technology better, a.k.a., and I'm referencing a really bad shark movie, Jaws 3 in 3D, but that movie, we actually saw an attack and a munching on from inside a shark's mouth as it was clumping down on a person. If you got the GoPro camera, use today's technology to see that attack other than just, I thought it was going to be a lot more. Like, let's see the attack from a GoPro camera's side. Like, that would be fun. That would be exciting. That would be interesting. We just see, obviously, he was going for the head. I wanted to watch. Again, it's just my shark.
I don't think we needed it because we saw the shark already take out like four people.
I need it.
So, but
maybe we
I think
don't. I do. The I'm only, selfish.
Yeah. Listen, the only purpose
remember
of the
what they
GoPro,
said in Shark Night.
Oh God.
they needed shark, whatever they called it, porn.
Shark porn. Yes, that's right.
To sell to Shark Week.
Right.
Admittedly, I have seen that movie too. but I think the only purpose of the GoPro was to literally save her life, and it did. It did. It helps get someone to get her help. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about our two amigos, the two surfers, who speak better Espanol than me.
Right.
Muy poquito más.
And they're really surfers, too.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, the director, call it Sarah, he actually found them via YouTube, which is actually, you know, that's so 21st century. But he Googled them and he found a bunch of their videos and whatnot and they surfed together. And he's like, I wanted these guys and it would be more authentic if they were actually friends in real life. Hence, he put them in this movie because they were good friends and they could surf.
Yeah. And they provided, I felt that again, they provided in a sense a bit of comic relief, you know, when we first get there. They provided a sense of, well, like we were talking earlier, you don't go surfing alone. So there's safety in numbers, while they were there.
Which ironically didn't work for them.
Not for them. But which, go surfing alone. But
she messed it up, though.
She did.
You know, and that was the...
And they even told her.
I appreciate the one final round.
Right.
And they're like, hey, you're going to be done one last time.
One last time.
Mm-hmm. And that was the one, you know, the last time always messes up.
Yep.
And I also liked, it did set up the fat man because, you know, as they're walking, she's kind of looking at them and, you know, she's like, are they going to steal my stuff? And they don't. And she kind of, she has that moment of like, oh, okay, I should be a little bit more trusting. Like,
yeah.
Why am I suspicious of anybody?
Yeah.
You know, there's guys that want to surf. They're not going to steal my crap.
Yeah.
So.
Except for the fat drunk guy.
Yeah. Yeah, she trusted him a little bit too much.
And he had it coming, though,
too. What was she going to do? Yeah, he did have it coming.
Okay. That's what you get for stealing.
Indeed. The rest of them, I mean, you know, Chloe, the daughter, it's her first time in a movie, so we've never seen her. And everybody else, you know, they're actors. Like Carlos, he's an actor from Spain. Most notably from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, Cantiflas was a big, you know, was his breakthrough in Spain. He's actually known to be a very good comedic, Chaplin-esque kind of, Cantiflas was. And but he was good. I like that aspect of the story because, number one, that actor had a charm to him.
Yeah.
There was nothing sleazy about him. They didn't play the stereotype.
No, because he didn't take the money. He's like, no, yeah, no.
It's like, no.
And who's Uber?
Yeah, who's Uber? And at the end of the day, though, he also says, even though he claimed this is paradise, be careful.
Yeah.
Like, he said, be careful. It was like a nice relationship. For the time that they were together, and he had a good charm. He had a trusting charm to him that even as an audience member, you're going, yeah, this is a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. And like even at the beginning of Carlos, when he was dropping her off at the beach and whatnot, he's like, if you need anything and whatnot, I was like, okay, this is a character that will help her later on in the film.
You would hope, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, he's going to stick around.
Yeah, and I loved it, and I thought they used the language barrier pretty well. I like that she knew some Spanish, but he's... what does she call herself? Organized? He's like, yeah, bossy. Muy bossy.
Gringo.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that aspect of it. Yeah, it set the mood for the movie. What we're going to get. That's fun, but suspenseful.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. Anything else story-wise that we want to touch upon before we get into more of the production side of things?
I liked how like there was the beats in between every scene and whatnot. There was like a high intense moment and then some calm, and then it very much like kind of resembled waves. You know, it's like always up and down. You never know what's going to happen. But like there was intense moments, then calm moments, and then like more intense moments, just back and forth, and it kept the pace of the movie going.
Yeah, I mean, again, Colette Serra, he's not. You know, he's a guy that knows how to move a camera around. He's a person that knows how to. He obviously can build suspense. I just, as I said at the top of the show, there were certain scenes I wish he just set things up a little bit better, and maybe they wouldn't have come off as being a little hokey. But I, you know, to your point, you know, the pacing was fine. Listen, the movie is made for summer, and it's 87 minutes long, so. It never overstays its welcome, and you know it was all fine on those points, all good.
Yeah, you know what? Obviously, you know, Shark Week. They knew the portions of this movie were going to be unrealistic. They stretched out the truth. You know, a lot of comparisons, as I said, are being made to what's real, what's not real, and people actually do state that the biggest disservice to sharks was Jaws, just because people started. Fearing sharks more than they ever should have been, you know, just sharks.
But yet we have probably this year, and I'm not saying this to be a, I'm not saying this like the sky is falling, but there are reports that there was a report in the LA Times just this past week that says that the shark population around Huntington Beach area has grown. There have been shark attacks within the past couple of weeks on our own Southern California beaches here.
I think they're upset with us. They're watched. They're like, these if they fear us, fine. We're going to eat them.
You know, and then on the other coast, our home out in the Cape, that the Great Whites have returned back to Chatham and Orleans. Mm. So, you know, and then in Australia, we're always hearing about, you know, why you go surfing in Australia at this point. Like, you have it coming. I don't get it. People are getting chomped on.
Well, they shot this in Australia, even though it's taking place Mexico.
Right. Yeah. So, again, and I'm not calling the panic button. Jaws did something that rarely a film has ever done, but I think in part because of its tie-in with this book, and then it literally scared people out of the water in 1975. Like, literally scared people out of the water. Yes, you can say, I mean, Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws, many years later said, geez, I'm sorry that I ever had written the book because it gives sharks such a bad name, but I still don't want to go swimming with one. Sorry. And it's not just because of Jaws. I don't want to be with a great white if I'm in the ocean. Just, no.
Can't blame them.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't say that Jaws did a huge disservice. But, you know, I watch Shark Week, too.
But, yeah, it's like, on flip side, people have this fascination with sharks.
Absolutely. So. I do.
Well, because I think it's an age-old question.
And all those movies. But, like, all the iterations of any shark movie that came out after Jaws and whatnot. I think Jaws, like, really set the ball rolling. But, like, people have a fascination for watching, you know, sharks getting, like, and people getting attacked by sharks because for some reason that's entertainment.
Well, it's like, it comes down to a basic thing of, okay, can we trust them or not? And there's that fine divide of, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, it's just split 50-50. Like, you can't say 100% like, okay, sharks aren't dangerous because they are, but you can't exactly say, oh, they're just killing machines that want to destroy all of human life.
Right.
You know, and it's just that weird unknown, and people, you know, it's sickly. Like, they gravitate towards that, even though, like, they shouldn't.
Right, but I still don't want to be, like, if somebody says shark in the water, guess who's, like, heading for the hills?
Well, it's a very logical thing of, like, okay, well, if, you know, you look at it in terms of a four quadrant, like, okay, if I swim with the shark and he doesn't attack me, I'm safe, okay?
Right.
If I swim with the shark and he attacks me, I'm screwed, okay? Right. So there's that possibility. If I don't swim, well, then I'm not going to get attacked, so that's probably a safer thing. And so you look at it, okay, what is the safest outcome in this scenario? Mm-hmm. I'm going with that one.
Yeah, and many surfers here in Southern California, you'll hear them say, you know, geez, yeah, if you saw what was actually underwater, you probably would never go into the water. I mean, they know that risk exists. I'm just of the philosophy, why take it? Like, I don't want to be in the water. Like, I just don't, well, I'm not going to risk it. I don't consider myself to be a very lucky human being to begin with. So this would just be like, why am I going to tempt fate?
Well, let's other kind of facts about the sharks. They do have keen sense, and they can detect blood a quarter of a mile away. Mm-hmm. Yep. But it is not necessarily a dinner bell for them.
Yeah, there are many factors. It's funny that you bring a lot of this up. When Jaws 2 was released in cinemas, they actually had a shark factoid sheet, much like you're reading about. Yes, it's blood in the water, quarter of a mile away. Great eyesight. But the blood in the water, when it's coupled with certain erratic behavior in the water, like certain splashing, that's the dinner bell. That pretty much, they'll say, is what would attract the shark because they believe it's a fish or a seal or something in distress. But for a shark, a great white shark, I'm not Greg Skomel here, but from what I've learned from watching Shark Week, you know, when they're hunting prey, like the seal isn't bleeding. But their way that they hunt from going underneath them and such, and the way they will predate, so to speak. Very much like here. I loved that scene when we first see the shark. No, yeah. When we first see the shark.
The silhouette. The silhouette.
Yeah. And they were asked, like, does a shark do that? And there are many pictures. There are many pictures of surfers, and there's a fin in the wave, or the big black, you know, the grayness of the top of the great white that's either next to the surfer, unbeknownst to the surfer at all. So that scene was chilling. And it was in the trailer. I'd seen it in the trailer. I showed you the trailer, and you see it in the movie. That's even in the movie on the big screen. It's like, oh.
Absolutely. And they can swim, you know, I don't know if they can swim 25 to 35 miles, which that's what she's trying to figure out. They can be this one can be up to 25 feet, but they decided to apparently just make it 21 feet.
And they made it female. Mm-hmm. Yes, they made it female.
For a more scarier, menacing look.
The female sharks are bigger than male sharks, and they'll get to that size.
Yeah, and they're more beaten up too, you know, the scars and whatnot, to make it just more scary.
Yeah.
What did we think of the hook? Because obviously that was a plot point in there.
I think it just showed that the shark was also being hunted at one point as well. That it's like really you can't really tell who's the bad guy in this film. Like, was it Nancy or is it the shark and whatnot? Because the shark was probably just doing its own thing in its natural habitat, and it was being attacked by the humans, and then she went into his territory, or her territory more so. But, like, it just showed that it was both of them, you know, Nancy and the shark, just being in the water at the same time, and no one's really better than each other.
Yeah, except the shark's bigger.
Shark is bigger.
Shark is bigger and faster in the water.
And it was interesting to put the hook on it as well. You know, it had been around. This shark had been around for a little while. So, you know, and its size, too. Like, this was, again, one of my favorite shots that was in the trailer and in the movie. One of my favorite shots was that overhead shot of Nancy being on that small little rock, that shoal, and this air jet. The size of it's like this shark just going by her. Like, that to me, again, that had me sold in the trailer. It's like, oh, shit. I got, like, what am I going to do? This thing is just circling and such. It was, that was an amazing shot. Amazing shot. And they gave the shark life, although, again, to quote Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future Part 2, the shark still looks fake. Like, there were parts to me that looked CG. And I knew that they had some issues with the CG and that they were rushing a lot to try to get things done. You know, to this day, I will argue that the shark in Jaws is still the closest to a shark looking, you know, real for being in a movie outside of a documentary. The shark, there were parts that, to me, it just, you know, didn't look so real, especially Fire Jaws.
Well, I personally didn't have a problem with it, to be honest. I thought it was fine, you know. Towards the end, when we start to see its face a little bit, I was like, okay, maybe not. But certainly, you know, and that's why same sort of technique with Jaws, right? The more you can avoid having the shark being seen, the more realistic it's going to be.
Well, you know, they digitally superimposed the face from the Bruce the shark in Jaws onto the shark here, right? No. Nah, I'm kidding.
I was like, I did not read that. No. So, it is what it is. Anything? Why don't we talk? Dimitri, you had a ton of stuff about the director. Feel free to pull in any of it as we talk about it.
I wanted to talk about, the cinematography of this movie, because the gentleman's name, Flavio Martinez Labiano, I hope I pronounced that correctly, but he's mostly like a surf cinema. He shoots a lot of surfing and such. And I will say that this movie, when it wasn't filmed in a water tank, the underwater sequences, the surfing sequences, the over the head, beautiful. Like, amazing, amazing. Amazing use of the digital camera and how, man, it was beautiful. Stunning. The shots of the surfing, the sparkling of the water.
Almost made you want to go surfing until you saw the shark.
Yeah, it made you want to at least go swimming over here. I thought that this movie looked, for a $17 million movie, it looked fantastic. It looked really good. It really did. And I think that helps to coloration when we need to set up suspense, how things could be dark. And where one scene we can see the water straight down, but then in other scenes you can't see so much what's underneath.
And
you.
That's what he said. You know, they talked a lot about the fact that they could go bright with it and have it be scary, which a lot of times doesn't get to happen in horror and suspense and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah. You have to go darker and what.
What I liked is, like, this film, we're always talking about color and how that, you know, actually affects people's emotions and whatnot. Because at the beginning, when she gets dropped off at the beach, it's gorgeous. It's blue. It's sunny. It's, you know, that whole beach has a lively personality and whatnot. And then, like, when she gets attacked and she's on the rock and whatnot, it's completely dark, completely grayish, bluish, you know. It just had so many different personalities to this one location. I think they did that well. And even at the end, when she goes back surfing again with the sister, it's, again, it's bright and cheery. And even though that was a different location, but, like, the color scheme was gorgeous and scary all at the same time.
Well, it's interesting. Well, this movie, as we said, it was filmed in Australia at a place called Lord Howe Island. Mm-hmm. And the location manager, Duncan Jones, you know, he said this is the first large-scale film production ever to shoot here. And you're talking about a place that has a residence of 350, 400 they got like 400 beds for guests. That's it. No, little to no Wi-Fi in or cellular service. You are literally in the sticks.
Yeah.
Over here. They had to. They did actually employ shark shields. For the production. Glenn Rulon notes that production had to employ shark shields to keep real life sharks from getting into the filming area. You know, and I just think that the location they picked. It's the dichotomy of paradise, but yet paradise
and hell.
And hell, yeah. I mean, we got paradise, but evil can permeate most anywhere.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that they talked about in terms of filming it was the fact that a lot of times when you see the camera moving in the water, the fact that it can be suspenseful, because a lot of times the camera movement didn't actually indicate a shark.
Right.
You know, you interpret it as suspenseful versus, when they did have the shark's POV, it was more straight.
Right.
And I thought that was a clever use of camera work.
Yeah.
As well. So, absolutely.
Some interesting things I found also about production was that because it's always difficult filming movies on water and whatnot, and Colette Serra, he said that the sun would change the color temperature of the water. Yes. And the beach. And that always messed with their shots, the things that they've already filmed, things they were about to film, the consistency of the look. And then even the water was big. I mean, the water itself is always a problem. But that changed a lot of their sets because with the high tide and low tide, when it was low tide, sometimes it exposed too much of the beach. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Nancy wouldn't even have to swim. She could practically walk on the sand.
Yeah.
And then the water, when they were actually filming, because of all the makeup that Blake Lively had to wear, it would just wash out.
Yep.
And completely take everything out and all the chlorine and mixture. It would destroy their sets.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of production things that they had to overcome as well.
Yeah, just watch. There is a fantastic documentary on one of the more recent releases, an anniversary of Jaws, about what nature can do to, today's technology. Whether it's 1974 when filming, you know, Jaws and Martha's Vineyard to today, like what that environment and the sea salt can do and the changing tides can just wreak havoc on a production. So, and as it seemed to do so here as well, it's tough when you have to deal with nature.
Yeah, as you mentioned, like, I mean, they're in the middle of nowhere. It's it's about 600 miles away from Sydney.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And
there were some days where, because, you know, they're off on an island area, that there were some days the weather was so bad that they couldn't even film, and that would also mess with their schedule.
Yeah. And they shot in the open water. The power of the ocean should never be underestimated, Colette Serra says. And he goes, imagine trying to direct a film crew to place an enormous set in open ocean with huge waves while Blake is on a surfboard and a camera operator has to capture everything. And meanwhile, the weather's changing, which changes the light for a shot that has to match the shot just captured. You know, and they were apparently they shot for 10 days here. So, and then the rest of it in tank. But they got the shots that they needed. And again, I was very impressed. There was one scene where she goes under with her surfboard.
Much like what's our movie? The Coast Guard movie?
The Finest Hours.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, but with a person.
Yeah, and she does this. The scene where she's taken, scene where she's attacked, her rolling over the coral was, again, it was a very good use of slow motion that wasn't overused, you know, and it worked for that scene. I thought that scene was amazing.
That kind of reminded me of Castaway, how they filmed the whole plane going down scene as well. And we see Tom Hanks' character, like, hitting coral and, like, all these things. Like, I think it was brilliantly captured.
Yeah.
And they even had that little one simple line, like, the coral stings.
Yes.
And then when you actually see her getting hit by the coral, you're like, oh, that has to hurt.
Gotta hurt.
Because they told us it really does hurt.
Uh-huh. So, gotta hurt. You know, and then, you know, she gets up and, you know, she goes to swim over to her board and then, you know, she's taken. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, it was very well constructed. You know, that was a good scene in suspense.
Absolutely. 100%. I agree with you guys. So let's talk about the music, Marco Beltrami. I thought, you know, I enjoyed the music. I thought, much like A Wave, which we've been using as a reference throughout, you know, you kind of had very high tempo music and then suspenseful as well. And I thought it worked well.
I think the music editing was actually pretty on point for this film, because at the beginning when she was surfing for the first time and whatnot, and it was so cool to watch, but we know what's coming. We know there's a shark somewhere in the vicinity. Every time she went under the water, it was like high tempo music. Then it would literally cut out to just the underwater noise.
Yes.
And then back above the surface, there's music again, like back and forth, back and forth. And every time she went under, I was like, is the shark here at this moment? Is the shark in this moment? And it's like, it was scary, but it was really, really well edited.
It was good. It was sound editing, sound design. My complaint about the music is, from my tastes, and I like a lot of scores, a little bit too electronic-y. Like, it could have used a little more orchestral oomph to it, other than relying on just doing electronic-y
but
stuff.
But is she the kind of person who would listen to orchestral music, being so dependent on technology?
Yeah, it's the she's not listening to score anyways. Yeah, like, no. But
she's
score
not like us,
plays a well. Lucky her. Yeah. Good for her. And more because she's not like me. I just say that with a more orchestral full sound, you could build suspense, you know, that much more, I felt. Not that the score got in the way of anything or the storytelling. It played a good bed. That was one thing that I had picked up just by watching the movie. So,
there you go. All right, promotion. All right. Anything else before we move on to promotion? All right, well, let's talk about it. So, you know, we've touted Blake Lively in the movie, and now she's really gone to town in terms of the promotion.
She has.
And, you know, I mean, part of it, yes, there's a selfish element to, like, if you put in this type of performance, you want it to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, and I can't take that away from her. Sure, she's got a huge following, but and she's utilizing it well. She has 9.1 million Instagram followers, 1.9 million Facebook fans. She took over E and their Instagram, and she was on the cover of Marie Claire.
It's like the biggest platform you can take over in E and within, you know, stars. Status more so, like, and good for her. And we were talking about, you know, age and whatnot. Like, she's part of that demographic that would use technology to get this film promoted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and well, you know, they couldn't. It was too expensive to take the shark around on tour, too. And plus, he just wasn't too talkative. So he had an attitude. So when you have a one-woman movie, which is basically it, like, I could see the other two surfer dudes doing some interviews, but this is a movie this is Blake Lively's movie. I know that they did take a very strong digital social media aspect approach to the marketing. That's what they were hitting on, which is smart. But she also did a ton of interviews. You know, she would talk to people. She went out there to stump for this movie, which is fantastic in the sense that, you know, her husband, think about it. Her husband also did a one-man show movie. I believe the movie was called Buried, if you've ever saw that.
It's kind of why she wanted to do this one, too. Yeah. She wanted a film that would challenge her in the same way.
Yeah, and, you know, he got a lot of accolade for it, and he did promotion, but who else are you going to go to? You going to go to the fat man on the beach? You going to interview the little kid? So I'm just glad that she was well behind it. And I think that they made a good enough movie. And her talk points were fantastic. Talking about the rigors, doing her own stunts, having to get ready. You know, what she had to mentally, you know, how she mentally prepared to do this role. And it's great when you have an actor who's going to go out and do that kind of stumping for
the because here's the thing, like, you know, some people complain about this actors, but they don't get paid for that.
Yeah,
you know, well, to me, I mean, that you should see the value and
I think it's sort of kind of built into the contract in one way, shape, or form, though. Like, they don't get paid for the appearance. But here's the thing: let's for the sake of our conversation, if the movie was a dog, okay, they would have known this movie was a dog going into publicity time. I don't think she would have done as many interviews.
No, she wouldn't.
You know, you're not.
It's always I've seen actors and I talk to actors, and when they don't want, you know, if they're behind a movie or not,
right?
And it's always kind of, it's like, oh, I'm doing this because I have to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And she seemed to enjoy herself.
Absolutely.
even on, to believe on Shark Week, if anybody's been watching Shark Week, they've had The Shallows interstitials with Blake Lively being interviewed about sharks in the shallows.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, they teamed up with they made partnerships with BuzzFeed. I mean, think of the popular site like that, BuzzFeed.
BuzzFeed is huge.
Huge. So, they definitely took advantage of a lot of things. And I mean, I'd love to see the approval rating on this, but the trailer has a 34-1 ratio of approval on YouTube.
Yeah.
I believe that. And if you think about it, it's also demographic does help with this film. I mean, BuzzFeed, E, Discovery Week, who's all watching that? That's the, it's like, I mean, we have some older people too, but like, it's the anyone from like 20s to their 40s who are watching this, who are going to see those films.
Yeah.
And who are on those same websites.
Right.
So like, she definitely has that following.
Yeah.
And caters to the people who are actually going to watch this. I mean, in our movie theater that Phil and I went to go see, it was all young people. It was people our age watching this film.
Yeah, it was the theater. I will say I was pleasantly surprised as to how packed the theater was. I went to a 7:30 show on opening night, and it was near sellout by the time the lights dimmed and we got into the movie. What was I going to say about marketing? Oh yeah, I remember when they came out with the teaser, and again, I was all in on this. I was just like, oh, this is what The Shallows is about? Because I had seen it on release schedules. I just didn't realize what it was. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, this has such great potential to be like, this is, and again, I thought that they marketed and they sold this concept. And I thought, that's a movie that I'd really love to see. It'll be suspenseful, fun, good summer fare movie. When I was at CinemaCon, they touted this movie, but they showed they showed us a small little chunk of it. They edited together some scenes, including the scene where the two surfers get back in the water, and she's like, "No, shark, shark!" And then, you know, One of them gets, you know, taken. The like money the shark shot. Jumps out. And again, I was like, I can't wait for this. It was one of those movies this summer that I was really looking forward to. There was Nice Guys, there's Star Trek, and there was The Shallows for me. Those were my three movies that I couldn't wait to see. Was it a week ago, 2 weeks ago when we were here? That new trailer just came out. And Phil, I was like, Phil, have you seen this trailer? I'm like, you gotta watch this trailer. They did a really solid job, Sony. And they've been very hit or miss with their marketing lately. Mm-hmm. But
and Josh Greenstein, so Sony president of worldwide marketing, said, we had the best reviewed movie of the weekend, and combined with the great audience response, saw fantastic result. People want to watch a film with quality that was original in the summer landscape.
Yeah.
That's what he attributes to.
74% Rotten Tomatoes the last time I checked.
It's not bad at all.
What are you dropping?
It's not bad at all. Compared to everything that's been out this weekend.
I'm scared. There's a shark.
Compared to everything that came out this past weekend, and for the probably arguably the most simplest film out of all of them to get the highest rated, it's like good for them.
Yeah,
it's,
well,
it's like a gem for
them. But can I say this? I mean, the cinema score on it's a B+. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I'm probably in the B-minus ish area, but the audience that I saw it with seemed to me to be in an A-. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, they were hooting and hollering at the screen. They were talking, like, when the movie got out. So when I saw B+, I was like, I just, not even from my perspective, I'm just saying, taking it all in. And can I just say this? How awesome was it to see this movie in a movie theater with an engaged audience?
It's fun.
Right? It's a fun, this is, you know, it's a fun movie to see this way, regardless of whether it's, whether or how much I liked it or disliked it, it's still seeing with that audience, screaming, hooting, hollering at it. It's a good summer movie.
I think that's why it exceeded expectation, you know? I mean, they were coming in that it's supposed to make $12 million. Well, it made over $6 million opening weekend.
$16 million. And they,
I'm turning it to Marissa Bad with numbers.
Yeah. Yep. And they haven't even gone overseas quite just yet, so I'm interested to see how it translates.
I think
over
it will, because it's very it's simple. You know, I mean,
it's so simple.
There's no dialogue.
Yeah,
you know.
But I just wonder, you know, Liam Neeson. You understand, like, for the nonstop, that movie's going to do very well internationally. I'm not sure how Blake Lively translates, but maybe it doesn't matter because of its story. And its simplicity.
I think between the story and, you know, it's a guy's movie.
Yeah, but is it just a guy's movie?
It's not just a guy's movie, and that's the great part about it. But, like, there's no doubt in my mind internationally that guys will go see this movie.
Yeah, but I think women, like, you know, it's a great date night movie. It really is, when you think about it. It's just got enough of that suspense. It's got enough of the comedic release to let that steam valve. Good horror is going to have a little bit of something, so you got to let a little bit of that tension. You got to bring it down before you bring it back up again, and it works in those levels. Movie cost $17 million. Its production budget, it was probably what Sony put into it, maybe around 35 to 40 all in, and thus far they've got, I don't know, about 25. They're on their way to 30. They'll probably have a half-decent hold going into the Independence Day, 4th of July weekend. So, they're going to make money on this movie. Mm-hmm. They're going to make money.
And I think it's rewatchable.
It. Yeah.
It's very rewatchable. Mm-hmm. And it's like the fact that it's that quick, like, oh, I can either go see like a four-hour Captain America movie.
Yeah.
Or I can see this twice.
And there aren't that many movies out here that are that the runtime is a savior.
Yeah,
you know it's an asset for this movie. Because if there's any more, wouldn't you get tired?
Oh, yeah, I would.
If this movie was an hour 45.
Well, like, even I mean, it's a short movie, but even I during the film, I was like, when is she going to get off of this rock? She's been there forever.
Yeah.
But there are some movies that, like, have a lot going on. I'm like, oh, come on. It's already 2 hours. Come on. Wrap it up.
And the sequences on the buoy were exciting. Yeah. You know.
And comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's try this again. So, yeah, I agree. All right, last thoughts as we wrap up our Shark Week.
Marissa, you go first.
I surprisingly liked this movie. I didn't really want to go see it, but I was like, eh, it's another shark movie. Sure, fine. I actually liked this movie more than I thought I would. And sometimes simple is better.
Yeah, I think a lot of times simple can be better.
Yeah.
Again, going into it, because I'm a sucker for shark movies, and they sold me a concept that I hoped was going to be utilized a little more, where I didn't like it as much as I had hoped to. Still doesn't take away that there were actual good scenes of suspense. It was short. It's perfect for the summer. In and out. You're going to be entertained coming out.
I agree.
And even for people who don't like horror movies, like you.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Even for people who don't like horror movies, you can go see this movie and you're not going to hate it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not horror. It's not Conjuring 2. It's not playing with lights and shadows and ghosts and this and that.
But don't you find that nature can be as horrific? I mean,
sometimes more, because to me, it's actually real.
Yeah, nature's more real. Yeah.
So, I enjoyed it. Time permitting, I would love to see it again. One of the fun things is I think reason why it will do so well is because I think there's going to be that pull effect, meaning someone like you or one of you guys will be like, oh, this was a great movie. I want to see it again, but let me pull in some other people who haven't seen this and see their reaction.
Or it's that great water cooler thing going, hey, have you seen The Shallows?
Yeah.
Shallows. Oh, is that the shark movie? You got to go see The Shallows.
Yeah. And it's Shark Week.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's got that because, you know, it really, I think that the word of mouth is it's a great ambassador and it's goodwill where it will hang in there for its second, for especially this, everybody's on vacation, people are going to the beaches. You know, you'll see Shallow references like, watch out for The Shallows or be careful, so, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also very excited for Sharknado, The Fourth Awakens. I know Dimitri is not the biggest fan of made-for-TV movies or stuff like that, but I think he'll forgive us all and we'll do Sharknado.
Listen, last year we had best experiences. We had Thunder Levin in it. Let's get him in again. I mean, listen, if it's made specifically for TV and it's not a VOD, you know, I'm fine. I'll talk Sharknado. I don't care. We had such a great conversation
We're going to have a blast with Sharknado. I tweeted about it. I said, hey, everyone's excited for their summer blockbusters. The movie that everyone needs to be excited for, July 28th, Sharknado, The Fourth Awakens.
The Fourth Awakens.
So good. So good. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us yet again. At DMovies1701.
That's it.
At Serafini TV.
That's right.
Where you can find her. Thank you guys for joining us. Again, the rundown can be downloaded in the descriptions section of wherever you are. iTunes, YouTube, the website, God knows where else. Thank you guys for coming, listening to us. We appreciate it. We give this stuff to you guys for free, but you know what? You guys put in time, so you guys still pay for it in some way, shape, or form. And the fact that you guys choose to be here with us, to watch us, to listen to us, that means something.
It's all good.
And if you're returning, God bless you. If this is your first time, hopefully you stick around. You're not like, oh, there's sharks. Get me away.
And remember, what was once in the deep now in the shallows. Be careful out there on the beaches this 4th of July.
Don't go surfing by yourself.
Go surfing by yourself. Go surfing by yourself.
Yeah.
That is the moral of the story. Don't listen to Marissa. Not cool. Not cool.
That's not cool.
Yeah, and don't dress up looking like a seal either.
Yes, that would definitely not be cool.
And don't swim with the seals just because they're cute.
Guys. We'll see you guys later on another Anatomy. We've got BFG coming up. We've got, we're not going to do The Purge. What's the other movie that I keep forgetting?
Tarzan.
And
Tarzana.
We're doing that one. As mentioned, we're doing Sharknado, The Fourth Awakens. We've got Star Trek Beyond. We've got Sausage Party. We've got a whole slew of movies coming down the pipeline. So stay tuned for all of those. We'll see you next time on Anatomy.
So long, folks.
producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.